restored pianos, and Kawai digital pianos. With lesson registration underway, info at farleyspianos.com or 271-2626.
Welcome to the Midday.
It's Norman and Vicki, and a little extra emphasis today on Green Bay. We have two guests in the studio, composer Jennifer Higdon, who happens to be the composer in residence for the Green Bay Symphony Orchestra this entire season, and the conductor of the Green Bay Symphony, Bridget Reichel. And over the course of the several concerts this season, the orchestra will play several works by Jennifer Higdon, and that's all thanks to a grant. And I thought maybe Bridget could elucidate. Would you tell us a little bit about
sure.
this grant?
I would love to. The American Symphony Orchestra League and Meet the Composers Music Alive program together fund a project that allows yearly resident composers to join with orchestras of all different shapes and sizes. And we were fortunate enough to be one of the only orchestras this year to be granted a four-year extended residency. Jennifer is our second in a group of four composers, and we're very, very pleased to have her here, you can well imagine.
Mm-hmm. Last year, your composer in residence was?
Mr. David Zubé.
And then you have two following Jennifer.
Dan Kellogg, and finally in 08-09, Philip Rothman.
So what are the pieces, Jennifer, that will be played this season?
Well, we have three works that have already been written. The first one that will appear at the opening concert in October, on October 21st, is Loco, which is a piece about a crazy train. It's a 10-minute concert opener.
A locomotive.
Exactly. It was originally written for the train yard at Ravinia where the Chicago Symphony plays, and I thought that's a little crazy to have a train yard where an orchestra's playing, or for an orchestra to choose to play in a train yard. So they commissioned a bunch of train work, so I thought the idea of loco being locomotive and kind of crazy also would fit. So that will be done. They're going to be doing then, at a later concert, a piece called Machine, which was originally written as an encore piece. This is an unusual thing to have, a work that's written as an encore.
True.
But National Symphony came up with this idea to commission several dozen composers to write short little two-minute works to finish off a concert. Huh. And the conductor walks right back out on the podium after all of the applause and just launches into it. It's a nice way to kind of close off a concert. Then in the spring in April, the orchestra is going to perform my work, Cityscape, which is a much larger work. It's kind of a symphonic scale. And it's a portrait of what American cities look like. Also on that concert, though, is a commission work that will be entitled Light. Now, it's a brass fanfare. It will open the concert, and I haven't started writing it yet. However, it's based on a poem with a Wisconsin connect. It's actually the first poet laureate of the state of Wisconsin, Ellen Court. And the poem is entitled Light, and I'm writing this, and we're working with a bunch of young kids from the Green Bay Youth Symphony Program. The youth orchestra is there. A bunch of kids have signed up to write works, kind of simultaneous to my writing my piece, so that we can commiserate and discuss how difficult it is to actually write a piece of music. We have several dozen kids who've signed up for that, so I'm going to be working with them both in person and some of my visits, but also probably most likely via email to figure out this process of composing.
Well, I hope you get it all figured out.
I do, too. You know, every time I face that blank page, I wonder, do I remember how to do this?
Well, you'll be working together. That's fun. You're also a self-publisher, and that's an interesting tack to take as a composer. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yes, it is very unusual. At first, it was out of necessity. I sent pieces into publishing houses, and I got the usual rejection letters, and then I was at a music festival where Philip Glass was attending, and he looked at all the students at the comp seminar and said, if you want to make a living as a composer, you need to keep the rights to your pieces. And I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting idea. Well, when I graduated from school, I started conducting and playing, and I started having trouble getting hold of music. It was either too expensive for my orchestra or wind ensemble, or we just couldn't get it in time for the concerts. So I thought, you know, the computers are advancing, they're getting better, the printers are getting better. With the appearance of Staples and Office Max, I thought, geez, I can go in and buy all kinds of bindings and envelopes and paper and cover. So I thought, why not do it myself? That way I can make it less expensive for the people buying it, and I can get it out very quickly. And it's been a learning process every step of the way, but I have to say it's been worth it, because then I can kind of share the information with other composers who'd like to do the same thing.
Are you a self-reviewer, too?
You know, I never critique my work ever. That would be difficult, actually, I think about it.
It would. Well, we have a couple of pieces of yours that we'd like to share with our audience. And the first one has to do with a very personal, it's a tone poem that you wrote on a very personal subject. And it's Blue Cathedral.
Right. That actually was written in honor of my younger brother, who was a year and a half younger than me, who passed away. Actually, now it's been 8 years, and I started it the year after he passed away. So I was still thinking a lot about losing family members. And I'd had this commission from the Curtis Symphony Orchestra. I thought, wow, that orchestra is very good. It was their anniversary, and I thought what Curtis would mean to the kids once they left. They sometimes don't realize it when they're there, but how much their friends and colleagues would come to mean to them. And I thought, it's pretty important, the paths we cross with everyone else in a lifetime. And I thought about my brother Andrew. His middle name is Blue. That's where part of the title comes through. And I thought about the word cathedral, how this is kind of a touchstone in everyone's lives. It's a place of birth, death, marriage, union, learning, fellowship. And somehow the word blue and cathedral seemed appropriate together. So while I was writing this piece, I imagined a glass cathedral in the sky. I thought, well, it would be blue because you could see the sky. You could see the clouds. I imagined a listener floating in through these crystal areas, pews, and the sun coming off of everything. And I also imagined the stained glass windows. Wouldn't it be something if the figures actually made music? And I imagine the listener kind of journeying up towards the ceiling, accelerating, and the ceiling opening, and it just being the stars. So I think it was a kind of a nice way to think about my brother and kind of commemorate him by using his middle name. So the tone poem is, it's a musical journey, but it's kind of a journey that everyone makes.
And this recording is led by someone that you met, I believe, when you were in school. And
That's right, as did
Robert
Bridget.
Spano.
Actually, Robert Spano, and I met Bridget in Bowling Green also. It was there's not much but the university there since the ketchup factory blew up. But
Sounds like another tone poem.
It does. A very different sounding tone poem, I would think. But it's right, I had known Robert Spano for quite a while, and by some strange coincidence, he was scheduled to conduct the premiere. When he was scheduled, he didn't know my piece was going to be on with the Curtis Orchestra. And so we reconnected after about a 15-year absence from each other's lives. And then right after that, he was appointed the music director of the Atlanta Symphony. So they were able to record this work on Telarc.
Blue Cathedral by our guest, Jennifer Higdon.
Thank you.
Blue Cathedral by Jennifer Higdon. And you say that's the most performed work by a living
American
composer.
Yeah, for the past 3 years.
How about that? Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you were talking about in that very exciting moment where the music is going up and up and up in pitch, you built that all around the horn part.
That's right. I knew that there would be a lot of power in the horn. So I actually started with the top note. I knew the horn players would appreciate having a chance to step up to it instead of leap. So I built a scale going to it, and then I built all of the chords around it because I knew the horn would deliver a real emotional impact.
There was another moment that was determined by the double bass section, too.
That's right, this beautiful low note that's very exposed. I had written it an octave higher, it wasn't as powerful, and the bass section of the Curtis Orchestra came to me and said, we would love to play this down an octave, it would really rock. And you know, they were right, so we kept it that way.
Well, a composition is a living thing.
Yeah, it is, and it's nice to have collaborators in making it work well. And musicians know a lot, they know a lot about their instruments, so I listen.
And as you work with kids, you find out that they really relate to new music.
They do. They respond to the rhythm and the new sounds and being able to even do things on their own instruments that maybe they've probably been experimenting at home with. Kids are always trying things out on their instruments, so it's a chance to exploit that.
Now, this is something I would not have expected, that you had a piece, this very piece, played at the Drum Corps International competition.
The World Finals, right, in Camp Randall Stadium. Boston Crusaders had done a show that had this work and my concerto for orchestra. They had amazingly, it didn't sound quite like this because it's set up for drum corps, but it was a very emotional show called Cathedrals of the Mind. They even had cathedral arches out on the field, and it was wonderful. At the end of the show, you could hear the audience kind of gasp when the arch came together, so I thought I really made it Drum Corps International.
You have arrived. Our quiz question will arrive maybe about 12:33 today, something like that, as we do have another Jennifer Higdon original, and it includes you as the performer.
That's right. I'm on both flutes. Imagine that.
Ah, no, that would be fun to watch. No.
Just confusing.
So tell us a little bit about this lullaby.
This is a lullaby that I wrote actually one of my friends from Bowling Green State University, also where I met Robert Sponnet, Bridget. It was she was having her first child, and I thought, wow, what a great gift. I'll just write a lullaby. That's very unique. So I decided to write something for two flutes. She's a flute player, and I thought, oh, we'll be able to play this together. So it's just a nice little calm piece, nothing to bop the kid over the head to sleep, just to kind of lull them down into sleep.
So, Jennifer Higdon, twice over.
That's right.
With pianist Hugh Sung and her lullaby.
Thank you.
Lullaby.
By Jennifer Higdon, who played the flutes, and who has been our guest, who is the composer in residence for the Green Bay Symphony Orchestra this year. Bridget Reichel also with us, the conductor, in that first concert, October 21st, at the Widener Center for the Performing Arts in Green Bay, will include a Jennifer Higdon piece at Loco, as well as Maxim Vengerov bringing one of the Stradivarius violins that has a Green Bay connection. So the Beethoven Violin Concerto on that concert. Thanks for coming and joining us today on the Midday.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Absolutely.
Next stop, the 12:30 quiz question here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
What was it that H.L. Mencken said? Folk songs are written, like all other songs.